This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hey everybody, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 395. Can't believe it. Wow. Closing in on 400 episodes. Would you do me a favor? Would you start thinking about something for me for my 400th episode? I sort of want to do something a little bit special. And you the listener, keep this show going. You're the ones that are the reason why I do this every week. No other reason. It's just because you folks keep listening and I keep hearing from you. And it's just a joy to be able to do this. I would like to find out what you get from this podcast. I don't get a chance to really hear too much from the majority of the listeners. You know, a lot of people do send me emails. Some send me voicemails, which I'm going to talk about one voicemail coming up here real soon. But I would like to really know, what is it that you take away from the Handgun World podcast? And I want to play that on episode 400. I'd like episode 400 to just be about you, the listener, and what is it that you're learning, or how are you benefiting from the Handgun World podcast and my efforts. So would you do me a favor? Would you call my voicemail? 210-646-1727. Call my voicemail and let us know, let the listeners know, what is it that you get out of the Handgun World podcast. I'm going to play this on episode 400, which will probably be pretty close to the end of this year. In fact, I'm going to make sure that it is available before the end of 2016, because starting in 2017, it'll be kind of like a fresh start for the show after episode number 400, okay? So please call the voicemail, 210-646-1727. I'd like to hear your feedback about the Handgun World podcast. Speaking of voicemails, I got one recently. It's pretty interesting, so listen up.
Hey, Bob. My name is Colin. I'm a senior in college in North Carolina, and I have a simple question for you. Why is shooting fun? My friends ask me all the time why I love guns. I heard you ask your son what he enjoys in shooting, and it's a common question, but I think the answer is kind of complex, and frankly, I don't always have a good answer. So I'd just love to hear your thoughts on it, hear your opinion, and I really enjoy the show and appreciate what you do. Thanks, Bob.
Hi, Colin. Glad you called. Why is shooting fun? Hey, that's a cool question. You really kind of got me thinking here of several different reasons. First of all, shooting is fun because I believe it gives people a sense of freedom. And freedom is fun for people. You know, the human spirit is all about freedom. And when freedom is suppressed, people don't have a whole lot of fun. But when you can go to the shooting range, or when you can take a training class, or go to a shooting competition, and start firing bullets, that's freedom. And that's fun. That's one reason, Colin. And the other reason is because I think it does give people a sense of empowerment. They feel like they can do something about a bad situation. And believe it or not, that confidence boost, I believe, makes shooting fun. Hey, when you go to a competition match, they're a blast. I mean, they are really, really lots of fun. Even if you don't do well, you're going to have fun. I just recently talked about this on another podcast where I was a guest. And it's so great. You can go to a competition match, and for $25 and a few hours of your time and approximately 100 rounds of ammunition, you can have a really good time. I believe that if something's not fun, that you shouldn't do it. And I hate seeing miserable people at a shooting range. I mean, I go to shooting ranges every once in a while. Sometimes I go to the public ranges. And, you know, and there are people there that are being instructed probably by a family member, which usually is not always the greatest thing. And you can tell they're just not having a good time. Maybe they were forced to be there or they were talked into being there. And it could be made so much more fun for them if the person knew what they were doing when they were trying to teach somebody to shoot. By the way, if you're trying to teach somebody to shoot, if it's a family member, you know how you can make sure that your family member has a lot of fun in going shooting? The best thing you can do is don't teach them. I'm serious. Take somebody else. Take somebody else that you know that knows a lot about firearms and that maybe has a knack for teaching, and go along. Be a participant. Do some shooting. But let somebody else teach them. If that's possible, do that. You'd be amazed how much of a difference that it makes. Colin, I think the noise, the noise of firing a gun and then watching something, if you're shooting it, watching it, you know, explode. That's fun, isn't it? I mean, that's a lot. That's a blast. Or when you hear that steel, you know, go bing. Every time you hit it, you know, you get this distinct bing from a piece of steel getting hit. That's fun. And then when you start rapid firing, and that steel, you just hear bing, 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 bing. Every time you hit it, you know, that is a lot of fun. It's just that feedback. You know, there aren't a lot of things that you can do where you get the feedback that you can get when you go shooting. So I think those are some of the reasons, Colin, why shooting is fun. At least those are my reasons. And maybe other people might share these reasons. And if you have another reason that you'd like to talk about why shooting is fun, call my voicemail, 210-646-1727. Colin, that was a good call. I'm glad that you decided to call in. Thanks for listening. And I'd love to get more calls like this one. You know, and I've been talking here about shooting, and, you know, the whole Handgun World podcast is mainly about guns, concealed carry. Occasionally I do gun reviews. Sometimes I talk about carrying your gun for defensive purposes. A lot of times, as a matter of fact, the interview I've got coming up, we talk a little bit about that in the interview I have coming up with John Payne. If you are in a self-defense situation and you have to use your gun in self-defense, I hope that never comes. I hope that awful day never comes. For all of you listening to this, I hope you do not ever have to use your gun. But you better be prepared if you do. You better know how to handle it, and you should really know what it is that you're doing with the gun. That's the first fight. The second fight is going to be when you go to court. You're going to get arrested, probably put in jail. You're going to have to go to court, and you're going to have to defend yourself as to why you did what you did. And that's not easy, and it's expensive. It can often cost $10,000 to $15,000 just to get a lawyer to start defending you. Now, I don't know about you. I don't have $10,000 to $15,000 that I can just, you know, really easily throw out there and it won't affect my budget. You know, so I need help. And so I'm a member of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. They are a sponsor of the Self-Defense Radio Network, of which this show is part of. The Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, for only $135 a year, will take away the worry that I just talked about. Go to armedcitizensnetwork.org. That's armedcitizensnetwork.org. Or you can call them on the phone. You'll find their phone number on the website. Please support the Self-Defense Network by giving them the tracking code Paul Lathrop. Paul Lathrop. Or 15625. This will be in the show notes. If you forget, go to handgunworld.com first. Go to the show notes. You'll see the tracking code. The Self-Defense Network, Self-Defense Radio Network, will get paid and you'll help us out. So I'd really appreciate it if you would do that. So I got John Payne coming up here in just a minute or two. John Payne and I are going to talk about guns that typically get brought to concealed carry classes. John is a Texas licensed to carry instructor. So am I. So we're going to talk about some guns that people typically bring to a concealed carry class. We're going to talk about some positives and negatives of what we see out there. Here we go. John Payne from Suarez International is my guest. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thanks for having me back, Bob.
Well, it's always a pleasure because you always come up with real good ideas, and this was your idea. So let's rock and roll here. First of all, I want to tell people, John is a law enforcement officer. He's a Texas licensed to carry instructor, and he's also an instructor with Suarez International. And we're going to talk about LTC classes, aren't we?
Yes, we are, Bob.
And even though you and I are LTC instructors in Texas, I think what we're going to talk about, it's going to apply to anybody anywhere that's going to take their concealed carry license and take the course and do the shooting.
Well, you and I both agree that the license to carry classes are not necessarily training classes.
Absolutely not.
But the information that we're going to discuss, I believe, also carries over to some training classes.
Okay.
Well, Bob, I know you've taught a few license to carry classes. I've been teaching them now, I believe, for 6 years. It's kind of hard to believe that much time has gone by.
Wow, yeah.
You know, I was introduced to teaching through the Air Force as a combat arms instructor, affectionately known as the, you know, Red Hats, CADM. So it seemed like it'd be a logical progression to me to go on to teach the license to carry class, or back when we started, you know, it was the concealed handgun license program.
Right. Seems like it was a good progression for you, sure.
And, you know, we know that, and the general public may not know it, so we're going to mention this, is that the minimum acceptable caliber for a license to carry class for you to qualify with is a 32, whether it be a 32 ACP or a 32 long, technically a 32 short. You don't see those much anymore, but they're still around.
And that's in Texas, and it's probably pretty similar in most other states as well.
I think it has a lot to do with who actually supervises the program.
Yeah.
You know, in some states, it's Department of Agriculture, which makes absolutely no sense to me. But the way they do it in some states is if you're an NRA certified instructor and you issue a certificate, they can turn that in to whichever governing agency and get their license to carry for that state. And then other states fall under their state police. So for us, it would be the Texas Department of Public Safety.
Yeah, so minimum 32 caliber, and from what you told me offline, sometimes you see some strange things, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes you see some strange things, and I think one of the reasons for that is you have people that are just inexperienced, and they really don't know what all they're getting into, or that they know that they need something for self-defense. And, you know, my grandfather left me this handgun, or my dad gave me this handgun, or I found a really good deal on this one in a pawn shop or in a gun shop. But, you know, it can get, would be a good word for that, precarious.
Precarious is a good word, yes, especially when you're talking about shooting guns, yes.
Well, the very first license to carry class I attended was shortly after the program began, and our instructor for that class was our non-commissioned officer in charge of law enforcement at Dodge Air Force Base. And if you remember back when, the class was a minimum of 10 hours, a maximum of 16, and he believed in using all 16 hours.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, you know, it wasn't horrible. He was very thorough. But when it came time to qualify, we were using the old standard DPS, those blue targets that had the big circle in the middle, and then you know, they didn't have a whole lot of scoring range. It was not the B-27 that we've been using for the last several years.
Okay.
But The distances were the same, the 3 yards, the 7 yards, the 15 yards, and a total of 50 rounds. But even in that class, when I was qualifying, a guy next to me was using a brand new Beretta 92FS in stainless. And that was a really smooth pistol. Except for he wrapped his thumb around the back of that slide.
Yeah.
And he couldn't continue the class because, of course, it cut him.
It'll cut you. It'll hurt you pretty bad.
Berettas are very good at that. That back corner of those slides, when it's coming back, is pretty sharp.
Any gun will do that if you got your thumb back or behind the slide.
Yeah, it's usually what I call a self-correcting problem.
It does. They don't do it for very long, do they?
No, they don't. They usually don't do it more than once. And I've never seen anybody do it more than twice.
So you've seen him do it twice, huh?
This poor gentleman did it twice, and he cut himself really bad. When I run the line for my qualification classes, I don't run more than 5 students at a time on qualification so that I can keep an eye on everything as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
And I always am very good about stopping somebody and telling them, you need to move that thumb because I don't want them to learn that from experience.
Yeah.
I want them –
That's one of those things you're trying to spare them of that negative experience, aren't you?
I try to spare them of that. I just cannot allow myself to allow them to do it. I just can't do it.
So see people doing that kind of stuff. Do you ever see any kind of really strange, scary guns? And when I say scary guns, I don't mean as if I'm some kind of an anti-gunner. I just mean guns that you think might not be safe.
Guns that either aren't safe or just would not be an ideal choice to shoot a 50-round qualification course.
Yeah.
Like
what? What are some examples?
Well, when I went through the instructor's course in Georgetown and we qualified in Florence, there was 100 of us in that class. And there were monstrosities that were brought for instructors to qualify with that these people brought. And, I mean, maybe I'm just a little over the top and being overly cautious, but, I knew I was taking my Glock 17 to qualify with because I had to qualify with a semi-automatic, and I took my Smith & Wesson Model 19 for my revolver because I had to qualify with a revolver as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I took 2 boxes of ammunition for both, even though you only need 50. And the rounds that I used, I had a spare box for each one that I shot through the pistols before I ever left.
Okay.
Now, if you're going there as an instructor and you're going to be qualifying on that course, I don't have a round pulled for me because I had a dud or because I had a malfunction. And if I'm shooting a revolver, I want to make sure that, that hammer has got enough power when it strikes that primer that it's going to go off.
Sure.
So I tested what I was taking before I took it. I thought that would only be considered, to be prudent.
Well, it's a very smart thing to do. You should always test before you show up to take the shooting test. Make sure you got working guns and working equipment.
It only makes sense to me, but evidently it didn't make sense to some others.
Hey, hold that thought. Hold that thought. I got to compliment you. That Smith & Wesson Model 19. You let me borrow that when I took my instructor's class because at that time I did not own a revolver. That is a sweet shooting gun.
That just shows how much I trust you and like you, Bob.
Exactly. Thank you. I appreciate that. It is one sweet revolver. I'm jealous. I made you an offer to buy it, but you wouldn't sell it.
That revolver is not for sale. It never will be for sale. It does not have the prettiest finish in the world. The finish is holster worn. It's a blue, what was it, a 19-3? It's got the pinned barrel, the recessed chambers.
Yeah.
The grooves were removed from the trigger face, so it's got a smooth face trigger. It's got the standard combat hammer, wearing wood, the Paul Ferro Hogue grips. It's just a good, sturdy, well-maintained older revolver that will be passed down to my son and then on to his. It's a very good quality revolver.
Well, I can attest to that. I can attest to that for sure. And, okay, sorry to interrupt and get off track. So you said a lot of other people didn't really test their gear before they came to the instructor class.
No, we had some older, you know, I hate to throw this out there, but there were some older 1911s that weren't functioning. There were revolvers that would not pass the push-off where they would the instructor would cock the hammer and then apply pressure to the back of the hammer. To make sure that it stayed locked, and it did not. There were several firearms that went down during qualification. And then there were others that just did not function.
And this is amazing to hear you say this, because these were people showing up to become an instructor. These were not just ordinary concealed carry students. These were people showing up to be concealed carry instructors.
Yes.
And they come with malfunctioning equipment.
With substandard equipment.
Substandard equipment.
And so, you know, and that was several years ago that occurred. I mean, like fucking 6 years ago. But I mean, I made a mental note and said, well, I hope that's never me that does something like that. And I think I take the precautions to keep something like that from happening. But, you know, getting on to, you know, my experience teaching these classes, I like to throw it out kind of like as similar to going to get your driver's license.
Okay.
Now, you wouldn't dream of going to the DPS, to your local license office, and throwing your money on the counter and saying, you know, I'm 18 years old, here's my money, teach me how to drive.
No.
But people have that impression about the license to carry class.
You're right.
You know, I just bought my gun and I want to get my license to carry. Teach me how to shoot in this class. Now, of course, as part of the curriculum, you do touch on marksmanship fundamentals, but it's not a class to teach you how to shoot. And I don't want this to sound like a rant, because that's not my intention at all whatsoever. My intention is to educate the general public on what the class is actually for and what they should know before they come.
Okay.
One of those things is you're required to have a handgun, a minimum 32 caliber. You need eye protection, ear protection, at least 50 rounds of ammunition. I suggest bringing 100. If you don't shoot 100 rounds, then you still have 50 rounds of practice with another day. But if you have to requalify because you didn't make it the first time, which is very rare, but it does happen, it's good to have another box. to do it over. Now, I'm one of those guys that for the longest time, it seemed like I was getting ready to go to the class because I would include a couple extra handguns in my bag, a couple extra boxes of ammunition, extra ear protection, extra eye protection, to make up for someone that might forget something. I've had people forget ear protection. I've had them forget eye protection, and neither one of those are an option. You have to have those.
Have to have both. And, you know, you're just being a good instructor doing that. I do the same thing. I do the same thing whether I'm taking a class or whether I'm teaching a class. I'm bringing all kinds of extra guns, holsters, mags, ear, like you just said, ear and eye protection, everything.
You know, and I even go so far as to make a list for the students so that they know what to bring. You know, a modern revolver or semi-automatic pistol chambered in 32 ACP or larger. 2 magazines or speed loaders, 50 rounds of new factory ammunition, no hollow points or reloads, you know, eye protection, ear protection, both mandatory. Suggested items include note-taking material, water, snacks, the importance of closed-toe shoes, you know, no flip-flop slides, whatever you want to call it, shower shoes, no shirts that may reveal a little bit of more cleavage than it should, because you've been on enough gun ranges to know that if you're wearing a loose shirt that allows any amount of cleavage to show, eventually someone's brass is going to end up there.
Absolutely. All the time. Brass just absolutely ends up there, and you're just asking for it. You really are.
You are, and you can go through YouTube and find the videos very easily where that's happened. And that brass is fairly hot. It is, you know, it's going to leave a little lead mark or possibly a blister, but you want to avoid that if at all possible. A good baseball cap that covers the top of your eye protection is a good idea. I mean, I've had brass landed between the bridge of my glasses and my nose, and it's not comfortable at all whatsoever.
That doesn't feel very good. And, you know, you brought up, John, I want to ask you to go back something you said 5 minutes ago. You said a lot of times people come to the class and they expect you to teach them to shoot. I'd like to interject and just say, you know what, going to get your concealed carry license, that's not a teach me to shoot class. I think you're expected to know how to shoot before you get there. Would you agree?
Well, yes, and that's why the qualification is called your proficiency demonstration. You are demonstrating to that instructor that you are proficient with that firearm.
Yeah.
You know, it's a test just like the written test.
It is. If you want to learn how to shoot, get that kind of a lesson before you go to a concealed carry class.
Now, one of the things that I have done is before I accept somebody as a student, is that they contact me either through my phone or through my email, and I do a brief interview. You know, okay. How much shooting have you done? You know, what do you understand about the fundamentals? Is this a brand new pistol, or is this one that you bought here and you've already begun to practice with it? Do you understand how your pistol works?
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. A lot of them, well, you're probably not surprised, but a lot of them don't know how their pistol works.
A lot of them do not, and I've had a handful of people contact me and say, I want to take your class, but I am not ready to do the qualification course. Can I take a couple of lessons and, you know, get that started? And, you know, I'm overjoyed with that. I usually meet them after work at the range, and you know, it's $35 an hour for someone like me to teach them just the fundamentals and basic firearm safety. I had a young lady here a few weeks ago. That's what she did. She said, you know, I've got this, and this is an interesting story. She is a stay-at-home mom. She has, let's say, at least four children. And her husband is on the road quite a bit. Of course, I won't mention any names. But she said that she went to a gun shop, and she was talking to the clerks, the store employees, about, I need a good firearm for home defense.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have a lot of experience with firearms.
Uh-oh. I hate to hear where this is going, but keep going.
Well, they sold her a Taurus Judge.
Oh, a Taurus Judge. Okay. Why?
And honestly, that is one firearm that, whether it is a quality revolver or not, I don't have a whole lot of use for one of those. if I'm going to carry a 45 Colt, I'm carrying my Ruger Stainless Blackhawk. And if I want to shoot shot shells through it, well, they make shot shells for 45 Colt. Or I'll carry my 4-inch 44 Magnum, and they make shot shells for it. But the only use to me for the shot shells is, you know, snakes when you're checking fence lines or something of that nature. I really don't see a benefit of having that. What is that's chambered for? It'll take 45 Colt or 410, and the 410 is it has three pellets in it.
Yeah, shame on the sales clerk that sold this lady that gun, especially knowing that she's new, probably never owned a gun before, and was going to go take a concealed carry class.
Well, at the time, the concealed carry class hadn't come into the equation yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
But a lot of folks have got the misconception that a revolver is a better firearm for a novice. And I counter that is not necessarily true.
Well, and what's even worse is when you give a novice the Taurus Judge revolver. Come on.
Well, yeah, and this is a beefy revolver in stainless steel. It only holds 5 rounds. It handles the standard 45 Colt very well, but it is ungainly, it's heavy, which isn't always a bad thing. You and I both know that a heavier revolver will soak up some of that recoil.
Yeah.
But at the same time, teaching someone the fundamentals on a revolver, to me, can be more difficult than teaching the fundamentals on a semi-automatic.
Yeah, sometimes it can.
And one of the major drawbacks of that revolver is that long, heavy, double-action pull.
Yeah. Sometimes that's hard for novices to master.
You know, I've had elderly students that could not manage the trigger on any revolver. That, you know, due to either arthritis or, you know, their hands getting weaker with age, they just couldn't handle it.
You know, sometimes when you have a shooter that has weak hand strength, a lot of people are way too tempted to hand that person a revolver, thinking that they don't have the hand strength to rack the slide on a semi-automatic pistol. And I've always thought, if they don't have the strength to rack the slide on a semi-auto pistol, what makes you think they're going to have the hand strength to pull that long double-action trigger?
I think we're going the same place with that.
Yeah.
I really do. And usually I find the problem they have with the slide on a semi-automatic is more a matter of technique than it is hand strength.
Absolutely.
But getting back to the revolver, you know, what problems do we have with that for a novice? Limited ammo capacity is one of the big things. That heavy double action pull, you know, even on a J-frame, you're looking at what, 12 and a half pounds?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay. Then you've got, especially with something like a J-frame, the extremely short sight radius. And even then, the sights on a small revolver they're minuscule.
Yeah.
And they're hard to pick up.
And most of the time, their obnoxious recoil just intimidates a new shooter.
And you'll see the nice little pink J-frames or charter arms or what have you. Charter arms, whatever it's called now. I'm not even sure anymore. They've been around for a while and they can make a decent revolver, but I would not consider any short barrel revolver to be a beginner's firearm.
No.
You know, if I was in charge of putting together a handgun for a novice shooter, someone that was recoil sensitive, I think years ago, Beretta had, 84, out that had a tip-up barrel in 32 ACP.
Okay.
Well, with a tip-up barrel, they never had to run the slide. The Tomcat is still made in 32, but you know it's very small. The sights are better than a J-frame, but it's still a very small small handgun. But the 84 was almost the size of a Colt Commander.
Okay.
And you had a double stack. Yeah, it had a double stack magazine. Yeah, you know, aluminum frame, steel slide, steel barrel, had a little bit of heft to it. Wouldn't be an ideal pistol for you or I to carry for a concealed carry pistol.
No.
But as far as someone with limited hand strength and were recoil sensitive, that little gun was Cadillac.
Okay. What about some of the guns that are more widely sold today? What do you recommend?
They still produce the 84, I believe, in 380, which is going to give you a little more recoil. You know, not as gentle as a 32, but you know, a lot less than a 9mm. Several of them, you know, a 9mm and a medium-sized handgun has a lot less recoil for those that are sensitive than any revolver that I could think of that would fit the parameters. Now, the only time that I could think that would not be the case for revolvers if you had one of those Smith & Wesson kit guns in 32 long. Those are Cadillac-ing little guns. But then again, you also have the problem of the double action trigger. But you know, the recoil is almost non-existent, and it does meet the state requirements. But you know, it's 32 ACP is almost a specialty round now, and so you're going to be looking at something probably a little larger. You see a lot of 9mm, you see a lot of 38 special, you see a lot of 40, and then you have you have a smidgen of 45 ACP thrown in here or there.
So what do you tell people to do in terms of preparing for their concealed carry class? What do you think would be the ideal preparation for somebody?
The ideal preparation for a concealed carry class is getting with an instructor or with a family member that's well-versed in fundamentals and having them coach you through the fundamentals and firearm safety.
Okay.
Yeah, the biggest problems we see on a line in concealed carry class are either going to be putting their finger on the trigger when their finger shouldn't be on the trigger, or being careless with their muzzle.
I would imagine those are probably the two worst right there, yes.
And so that's why I only run five people on the line at a time. And that's why when we even start, you know, I'm giving them the information on fundamentals. I'm giving them information on firearm safety. And I'm explaining to them and demonstrating that, you know, we've got these tables in front of them that where their handgun will be placed during qualification. And that the only place that muzzle will be pointed will be downrange. When they pick it up, set it down, the muzzle will always stay downrange. And that way I can see everyone at the same time and make sure that they stay safe.
Okay.
You know, one of the things I would tell them to do first is to find a handgun that they are comfortable with. And that is reliable, that, you know, is 32 or larger. Somewhere usually in between 32 and a 9mm will do just fine. Factory new quality ammunition. This is not a time to go to Walmart and buy the cheapest stuff that they can find, or go to Academy and buy the cheapest stuff that they can find. You'll see, you know, and I'm going to make some people upset here, but you know, you'll see Wolf ammo, you'll see Tula ammo, and sometimes it does great, and sometimes it doesn't.
You know, and you're bringing up a very good point. I agree with you about this. Explain to people why it's important to have decent quality ammunition when you go to your concealed carry class.
You want to remove as many variables of things that can go wrong as possible.
Right.
You know, even the big name ammunition companies make mistakes.
Sure.
Here recently, at one of our local gun shops that I use a whole lot, a guy came in. He said, look, I bought this yesterday. I went, opened the box, and it's supposed to be 150 grain 30-06. It's marked on the box, 150 grain 30-06. What was in the box was 150 grain
30-30. Okay.
We pulled six more boxes off the shelf, and they were all exactly the same.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, that does happen. So what I would say is when you buy your ammunition, check it and make sure it's correct.
Good point. Good point. Now, okay. Let me reinforce what you're saying, because in the concealed carry classes that I've taught, or as we call them here now in Texas, the LTC classes, the ones I've taught, I've had a couple students that just had to battle malfunctions through the entire shooting qualification. And it's only a 50-round shooting qualification. So they're not shooting all that much. They're still battling malfunctions. And it's anywhere from ammo to magazines or shooter-induced malfunctions. And that's why – and they had a hard time getting much out of the class at all. So I think that's kind of where you're coming from too, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's exactly where I'm coming from. This is not a time – to try out your gun show special magazines. You know, if you buy a Browning High Power to use in the licensed carry class and you've shot some rounds out of it, make sure you're using either factory magazines or Magar magazines. You know, if you're shooting a 1911, make sure that you're either using the factory magazines that came with that, or that you're using Wilson Rogers or Chip McCormick's or another quality magazine. You know, the magazine, as you well know, is one of the weakest parts of a semi-automatic pistol.
Yes,
with a great magazine, a mediocre pistol will run okay. with a poor magazine, a great custom-made gun won't run.
Yeah, and I would also go a little bit further, and we touched on this earlier in this interview. Don't let your concealed carry class be the very first time that you've shot that gun. You know, even
don't do that.
Yeah, don't let it be the first time. Don't let it be the first time that you've shot the ammo that you brought. You know, you said go buy 100 rounds, 50 for the class and 50 for the practice. How about buying 150? How about practice 50 rounds before you take the class, shoot 50 rounds in the class, and now you got another 50 left over after the class. But that initial practice session is going to make sure that you have a good running gun and good quality ammo and decent magazines.
I could agree more. Especially now when you can go and buy a box of 9mm. You can buy a 200-round box. You know, and it comes out to about $10 a box.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's a small investment.
Problem solved.
Problem solved, and it's a small investment when you're talking about something that could save your life. You know, you're getting your license to carry a gun. And these are good preparation tips. We got about another 5 or 6 minutes. What else would you tell people in terms of preparing for their license to carry?
Buy a quality firearm.
There you go.
I've never seen a Maverick or a High Point make it through a 50-round course.
Okay.
I've never seen... a Jennings, a Bryco, Lorsman, or any of those other die-cast metal 380s make it through a 50-round course.
Right.
Occasionally, I see problems with a Bursa 380. Occasionally, see problems when they haven't been broken in prior, make it through a 50-round course.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't go into your grandfather's war chest and pull out that Walther PP in 32 that hasn't been shot in 50 years and buy a box of ammo and just bring it with you.
Yeah, you're probably going to get pretty frustrated with that.
Yeah, Walther PPK is a PP or PPKS are quality little guns. But you have to shoot the things and know that they're going to function with what you're using.
Yeah, and if it's been sitting in your grandpa's safe for 25 years, chances are, as soon as you pull it out, it's not going to shoot very well.
You know, I had one gentleman that he's a really interesting character. Hit the first little gun that he brought just was not going to work. He had what looked like a Smith & Wesson Victory model chambered in 3220.
Yeah.
So it met the requirements of minimum caliber 32.
Yeah, it did.
And that dude could take the wings off a gnat with that old gun.
That's good.
Okay.
So obviously it wasn't the first time he shot it.
No, it was not the first time he shot that thing. It was very interesting. That's an interesting old cartridge. You know, good luck without the internet of buying new ammunition for it. But here's something that I saw as far as, I'm glad you showed that to me and you didn't shoot it. This one gentleman that I've known most of my life, matter of fact, he was my principal in junior high. So he thought it was rather comical that he was now taking a class from me when I used to be in his classes when I was little.
That's funny.
Showed me a revolver that was left to him from his father. Well, I immediately recognized this as a 5-screw Smith & Wesson K-frame. You know, it looked like a Victory model.
Okay.
5-inch barrel finish was very worn. It, you know, it wasn't necessarily abused, but it was an old revolver. And the first thing that I noticed was that the barrel was marked 38 Smith & Wesson. And while I'm telling him the 38 Smith & Wesson and 38 Smith & Wesson Special are two different things, and you cannot use 38 Special in this revolver, and 38 Smith & Wesson is harder to find, I opened the cylinder to show him that the 38 Special wouldn't fit. And this is where I noticed the problem.
And what did you find?
It did. The chambers had been reamed for 38 Special.
Oh, no. Okay.
And you know what that means. It was not done correctly. And there's a bunch of these out there. I first learned of this, an article that Alex Newland from Swords International wrote years ago. about these K-frame Victory models that were being sold at gun shows, that the barrel had been trimmed to 3 inches and everything, and how they had been reamed from 38 Smith & Wesson to 38 Special. And if you fire a 38 Special on that thing, it's going to split the case, because the base of the 38 Smith & Wesson is larger than a 38 Special. So the back of the case was not supported. It expanded and split. And eventually you're going to get that gas and unburnt powder and hopefully not, but possibly brass fragments on you.
Yeah, wow.
So I was really glad he showed that to me. I explained to him what the problem was, why it wasn't safe, and that it was now what it was just a wall-hanging keepsake.
Yeah, just curious, how did you rectify the problem?
Oh, he had another gun that he brought that was new to qualify with.
Okay.
And he did just fine. But what he brought was a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380.
Okay.
And at 7 yards and at 15 yards, he had a more difficult time with that gun. And he decided, you know, I need to buy myself a larger gun.
Yeah, you know, a good shooter can do just fine at 7 and 15 yards, but if he was, you know, not somebody that shoots all the time, he probably struggled. I can see that.
You know, his comment was, man, this thing is light, it's small, it's easy to carry, but it is hard to shoot.
They all are.
You know, I've seen the Ruger LCPs on the line. I've seen Kel-Tec P380s on the line. And they can run just fine as well for somebody that's very experienced. But for the inexperienced shooter, those little pocket rocket 380s are hard to shoot. They're thin. They're light. The recoil is magnified. You know, they're not a good choice for taking a test.
No, especially if you're taking a test and you're not somebody that shoots all the time. That's correct.
So, you know, that's one of the things I've seen here recently. I saw a Colt. It was the same frame as the D frame model, which would be a Detective Special or a Cobra or an Agent, and it was in 32 Colt long.
Okay.
And it was too old and too worn to be used. It wouldn't lock up properly.
All right.
I have had someone bring a 32 Smith & Wesson Long Ivor Johnson top break revolver.
Hmm, that's interesting.
It's interesting. Was never a really high quality gun. With the powder puff 32 long ammunition, it, you usually wouldn't have a problem. As long as it locked up properly, you know, it would be fine. But the double action trigger on those things were like 19 pounds.
Oh, that's stiff. Ooh.
They're stiff. I've seen a few old H&Rs, Harrington and Richardson, things of that nature. But, you know, if you show up with a modern firearm of reasonable size, reasonable caliber, reasonable trigger, it makes things a lot easier.
And I would like to tell people that if you don't own such a firearm, one that's a relatively modern gun, you know, either a striker fired or even a, you know, relatively modern 1911. There's nothing wrong with borrowing a gun like that from somebody. Just borrow it in advance. Make sure you put enough rounds through it. Make sure the gun's working fine. All the magazines are working fine. I'd say that'd be a good idea if you don't own one of those.
Yeah, and I make firearms available to my students that haven't made their final decision, or if they want me to meet them at the gun store and help them select a gun. You know, I won't select one for them, but we'll help guide them to what I think that they would like.
Right.
It's kind of like we've had this conversation before. I don't buy my wife's shoes. I don't buy her purses. Therefore, I won't pick her gun either.
A very, very good point. And you know, I'm the kind of instructor, when I teach a class, I'll bring five or six firearms. And I'll try to make each one of them a little bit different, so that if there is somebody that comes with a gun that they have never shot and all of a sudden it chokes on them and they can't use it, I've got one to put in their hand.
So let me go back to this young lady that had the Taurus Judge.
Okay, yeah. Sorry we got off track on that, yes.
But she contacted me. This is an example of a student that did everything right. Okay? So she contacts me and says, I want to learn how to handle my firearm correctly. So she meets me, and we have a two-hour session. Then about 5 days later, she makes another appointment. We have another one-hour session. During these sessions, I let her shoot a Glock 43. I let her shoot a Carr PM9. I let her shoot a Glock 19. I let her shoot a Glock 17. I give her a variety of things that she can try out and see what she likes.
Okay.
Well, she said, you know, you're only having me shoot at 3 yards and at 7 yards. And I'm teaching her to shoot at tiny targets at 3 yards and at 7 yards.
Good.
Okay. And I mean, she's doing very, very well. She's paying attention. She's listening. She is following instructions. She's checking her grip. She's checking her stance. She's working on her breath control, her sight picture, her sight alignment, breath control, trigger press, trigger reset. She's working all of that. Okay.
Okay.
So 2 days before the class, she calls me and says, hey, I want to take the class this weekend, but I may want to shoot the qualification at a later date. I said, that's entirely up to you. You can take the classroom portion first. You can qualify later. Does not matter when, you know, as long as it's, you know, within reason. So I'm thinking she's going to show up for the class, take the test, and then she'll give me a call on Sunday or Monday, and I'll go out and qualify her. So we get done with the classroom portion. She made 100 on her test. I was proud of her.
Good.
And I said, okay, well, I guess you'll be contacting me for, oh no, I'm going to qualify today. She goes, I went back to a gun shop that you told me to, and I bought a Gen 4 Glock 19.
All right.
Of course, at that moment, the sky was blue, the beer was cold, and all was well with the world. No, there was no beer out there. That's just a saying. But, you know, everything fell into place. So, you know, for a lady that 2 weeks prior had never shot a semi-automatic, you know, you and I both know that the minimum passing score for a licensed carry student is a 175.
That's right.
Instructor has to shoot a 225. And she shot a 227.
Nice. So she beat out. So she qualified good enough to for the instructor qualification also.
Yes, she did. The student that scored the highest during the proficiency portion was another lady that outshot her husband, and he was eating crow the rest of the day. But what impressed me the most was this young lady on the line, safe. She was checking her grip. She was going through all the steps, trigger press, trigger reset, follow through and all this. When it came time, because you know, there's no reloading during the qualification. It's in between stages or in between strings. She would bring that pistol up into her workspace. She would insert that magazine correctly. She would grab the back of that slide, pull back, and let go. And she was... just, she was on it. I was so proud.
That's great. And what did she do with the Taurus Judge?
Oh, she still shoots it. She still likes it.
Okay, okay,
but
good.
Now, but now she understands more about it. And I believe my son's home. My guard dog is informing me of that, if you can hear that.
Yeah, he's telling me.
I apologize.
He's telling me.
Anyway, yeah, she can hit with it now. But she's much more comfortable shooting the Glock 19 than she is at Taurus Judge.
Of course. That's an interesting story. So she, what is it? Did she ever tell you what made her go back and get the Glock 19?
I rubbed off on her, so to speak. You know, I didn't tell her to buy a Glock 19.
Yeah.
You know, I explained to her what I liked about the Carr pistols, what I liked about the Glock pistols, what I liked about the Smith & Wesson M&Ps. She made her own informed and educated decision on what she wanted.
Good.
Yeah, she told me. This pistol is too big for me to carry. I'm not going to dress around this thing. So this is not something I'm going to carry on my person. Later on, I'll see about a Glock 42 or a Glock 43 for concealed carry. She says, I'm not going to open carry. I know that I can. I just don't care to. But as far as being able to protect myself in my home, this is what I'm comfortable with. And you taught me how it works. You taught me how to load the magazine. You taught me how to load the pistol. You taught me how to unload the pistol. You taught me how to check clear. She goes, those are the things that I was afraid of and why I gravitated to the revolver. Now that you explain to me how this pistol works, my comfort level is a whole lot better, and I'm not afraid of it anymore.
And did you say that she took a lesson from you first?
She took two.
She took two lessons from you first. Okay.
She took two lessons from me first, a total of 3 hours of instruction, and she breezed through the qualification like it was no big deal. But the phrase I like to use is just like eating lettuce, nothing to it.
See, and I'm glad you told this story, because this is what you and I both encourage people to do. Go take a lesson or two before you take your concealed carry class, not only so you can qualify easier, but you're going to become a more informed concealed carrier, a more informed gun owner when you leave and when you finally get your license. You're going to be just a step above where you need to be, and that's a good thing.
And all the anxiety she had about qualifying with that pistol and whether or not she could hit that target, all that anxiety was gone.
Of course it was.
So she was comfortable. She was informed. She was knowledgeable. Our biggest fear are those things that we don't understand.
That's correct.
You know, I don't want someone so comfortable that they're going to be a danger to themselves or others with a firearm. But you need to be competent and comfortable.
Good. Well, John, this is a good stopping point. Excuse me. But since it's a good stopping point, it's kind of where I want to end things. Let me go ahead and, because you donated your time here to do this, talk about some classes you have coming up.
Well, I've got a tentative schedule put up for 2017. That I have not submitted it as of yet, but the tentative schedule is put together. I do know that in early 2017, we are bringing the Red Dot Pistol School to San Antonio, Texas.
Awesome. To San Antonio. Do you know when?
I don't know exactly when yet. I'm looking at the March-April time frame.
Okay. Red Dot Pistol School in San Antonio.
You know, and that is a three-day class where you will learn to use an RMR on your pistol inside and out, and we'll take you from contact distance out to 100 yards with your red dot pistol and show you exactly what the capabilities are, why the red dot is such a advancement in having it on a handgun, what it does for people like you and I that have more seasoned eyes, where you don't get that perfect sight picture with irons anymore, or that you do get a good sight picture if you're wearing your contacts or your glasses. How many variables that red dot removes, what it allows you to do.
And you're saying that's going to be March or April time frame?
In San Antonio. I'm so thrilled about that. I taught two red dot pistol schools last year. One in Orange, Texas, and one in Canton, Georgia, to the Cherokee County SWAT team. And, what that allows you to do once you learn how to use it is just it's amazing. The speed and the accuracy. But we're talking about surgical precision. And, if you're somebody that says, well, this is combat accuracy and it's good enough, then this class probably isn't for you. If you want to be as accurate as you can possibly be while maintaining speed, then this is a class for you. And we'll also go over the difference between timing and speed and which one is more important.
Well, the fact you're bringing it to San Antonio means I have to be there. I just hope you're not doing it the third weekend in March.
Well, I'm sure that before that is finalized, that you and I will sit down and, your buddy Eric is going to be the host for that class, and I think you're supposed to be the co-host.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that, but I know it now.
Yeah, that's like informing you over the airways, right?
Exactly. Well, I will not be available the third week in March. I hope it's not the 17th, 18th, and 19th. I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be at the Tom Givens Rangemaster Tactical Conference in Arkansas, and I've always been wanting to take that. But so any other weekend in March or April, I'm there.
I'm pretty sure we can work something out where we can get that done. Where for me, it's going to be practically mandatory for you to be there. Helped me out a lot in San Antonio and get started there. I love coming to San Antonio and teaching. This will be what, my fourth class in San Antonio in the last 3 years?
I think you're right. I think it's going to be your fourth. That's correct.
You know, I've got some old service buddies that are still in the area. I lived in Leon Valley for a while. It's a part of the country that I love. And if I can arrange enough vacation time, not only will I be teaching the class, but I'll be going down to either O.P. Schnabel or McAllister and doing some mountain biking myself.
Good, good. Well, that's – I'm glad I just made notes in my calendar to keep March and April mostly free except for that one weekend that I'm going to be gone. And I'm looking forward to that.
It'd be, probably be a great time to do another podcast, wouldn't you think?
Sure, like probably about a month before that. A month to 6 weeks before that.
Doing a podcast during the class.
Oh, we'll do it during
breaks. And there's no better way to spend lunch than doing a podcast.
We did that when you taught your rifle class here last year. That was we got some good podcasts out of that.
That reminds me.
Yes.
Maybe we could have Dr. John Adeen show up again.
Dr. who?
John Adeen.
Who's that guy?
That's some guy I heard of. You know, he does a lot with orthopedics and joints and things of that nature. He's supposed to be a really smart guy. And the last time I was told, he's very confident with a firearm.
Yeah, you know, he's okay. We kind of put him in that intermediate category. He'll make it. He might make it through the class. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Dr. Adeen, we love you. We love you. We're just picking on you a little bit. And I know you're listening because you always tell me you do. We're just giving you a hard time. Yes, I hope that that Dr. Adeen's there.
Yeah, I do as well. We have a really great group in the San Antonio area. I look forward to seeing every one of them. If I don't mention them by name, I remember all of them. But seeing his name pop up with your with your podcast and with the what's the new conglomeration you have going on now with the Self Defense Shooters Network?
Self Defense Radio Network.
Oh, I'm sorry, Self Defense Radio Network.
Yes, sir,
which I think is a really good thing. I look forward to being more involved with that.
I do, too. I look forward to having you more involved with it, too. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate it. This was good stuff, good info for people getting ready for their license to carry class. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Bob. You know, the one thing that I really want is for the students, the armed citizen out there, to be educated, make informed decisions, be safe, take care of their families, and live good lives.
That's what it's all about. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Bob.
Have a good one.
You too, sir.
Well, thank you, John Payne. I appreciate you giving us your time and very good info. I hope those of you who are preparing to get your concealed carry license, that this was beneficial for you. After you get your concealed carry license and you start to carry your gun, you're going to need a good holster. And don't forget that Concealment Solutions is a sponsor of the Self Defense Radio Network now. And Self Defense Radio Network listeners, that means you get 10% off your order by using the coupon code SDRN. And there is a special link that you have to use to get that discount. It will be in the show notes for this episode. So go there, click that link. When you place your order at Concealment Solutions, SDRN will get you 10% off. I'd appreciate it if you would do that. Many thanks. A lot of you are already holiday shopping on my Amazon store, and I really appreciate that. You can support this podcast directly. Just go to handgunworld.com. Use my Amazon store. Every time you go to Amazon, go through my affiliate link, if you'd please do that. And that'll help support the show. And don't forget the Shooters Club and the Beyond Concealed Carry classes. Self-Defense Radio Network listeners get
good discounts on any of our classes that Ben and I are teaching in 2017 and Shooters Club memberships. Just go to selfdefenseradio.net, selfdefenseradio.net, and go to the listener discount page and use the coupon code SDRN, all lowercase, SDRN, all lowercase. And you'll find that at the listener discount page at selfdefenseradio.net. Let's keep up the fight, folks, for our gun rights. Just because the election turned out in favor of politicians and the president, who at least they say they are in favor of the Second Amendment and they're in favor of expanding our rights, let's please hold them accountable. Let's do our part. If you're not a member of the NRA, join. If you're not a member of the Second Amendment Foundation, join. I don't get anything from either of those two organizations. I just believe in them very strongly. Don't forget your Texas State Rifle Association. I guess I meant to say your local state. I'm so used to saying Texas State Rifle Association because that's where I live. Your state probably has its own rifle association. Become a member and any other gun rights organizations. We've got to keep the pressure up. Let's not get lazy and let's not just sit back and say, hey, guess what? Our side won the election, so we're good. No, we're not. Got to keep that pressure going. That's the end of this episode, folks. I'm Bob Main. Please don't forget, send me some feedback. Give me some voicemails about what you get out of this podcast, and that'll be for episode number 400. And if you listen to this show on iTunes, I would love to get some iTunes reviews from you. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or just a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Tell you what, this has gotten to be so much easier to do.
The Red Dot School?
No, the interviews.
Oh, the interviews. Yeah, yeah, I remember the first one. you struggled with that one.
I did. I was like, man, there are going to be thousands of people listening to me.
Yeah. Someday if you want some good laughs and you're kind of bored and you need to get some good laughs for the day, go back and listen to my first three or four episodes.
You know, the one word that I avoided during this entire podcast?
What's that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you used to say that a lot.
I'm not the only one. Almost every guest that you have on there, when they agree with you, will say absolutely.
Exactly. Even if they don't agree with me, they'll say absolutely.
So I made a conscious effort to avoid that word.
I didn't think about that. Well, you did a good job. I don't think you said it at all, did you?
No, I don't think I said it one time.
That's great. All right, man, I got to get running.
All right, Bob.
I'll talk to you later, John.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.